Kedo 3, chapter 21, conversation between Manu and Karadama, text 4. You have the sheets? Text 4. Tasyam, sa, vai, mahayogi, yuktaya, yoga, lakshanai, sasarja, katidha, virya, ta, Tasyam Savai Mahayogi Yogtayam Yoga Lakshanai Sasaraja Katita Virya Tadme Shushru Shavevada Tasyam Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Sasarja Kajita Virya
Sasarja Kajita Virya
Tanme Shushru Shavevada Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Sasarja Katita Virya
Sasarja Katita Virya
Tanme Shushru Shavevada
Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Sasarja Katita Virya
Sasarja Katita Virya
Tanme Shushru Savevada
Tanme Shushru Savevada Tasyam Savai
Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Sasarja Katita Viryam
Sasarja Katita Viryam
Tanme Shushru Savevada
Tanme Shushru Savevada
Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Sasarja
Katita Viryam
Tanme
Shushru Savevada
Tasyam Savai Mahayogi
Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai
Sasarja Katita Virya Tanme Shushru Savevada Tasyam Savai Mahayogi Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai Vedana. Tasyam.
Tasyam.
In her.
In her.
Sa.
Sa.
Kardama Muni.
Kardama Muni.
Vai.
Vai.
In fact.
In fact.
Mahayogi.
Mahayogi.
Great mystic yogi.
Great mystic yogi.
Yuktaya.
Yuktaya.
Endowed.
Yoga Lakshanai,
Yoga Lakshanai, with the eightfold symptoms of yogic perfection.
With the eightfold symptoms of yogic perfection.
Sasarja,
Sasarja,
propagated,
propagated.
Katita,
Katita,
how many times?
How many times?
Viryam.
Viryam.
Offspring.
Offspring.
Tat.
Tat.
That narration.
That narration.
May.
May.
To me. Shushrushave.
Shushrushave.
Who am eager to hear.
Who am eager to hear.
Vada.
Vada.
Tell.
Tell.
Translation. How many offspring did that great yogi beget through the princess who was endowed with eightfold perfection in the yoga principles? Oh, pray tell me this, for I am eager to hear it. Pupabhaja Prabhupada. Here, Vidura inquired about Kardama Muni and his wife, Devahuti, and about their children. It is described here that Devahuti was very much advanced in the performance of Eightfold Yoga. The Eightfold divisions of yoga performance are described as 1. Control of the senses, 2. Strict following of the rules and regulations, 3. Practice of the different sitting postures, 4. Control of the breath. 5. Withdrawing the senses from sense objects. 6. Concentration of the mind. 7. Meditation. And 8. Self-realization. After self-realization, there are 8 further perfectional stages, which are called yoga cities. The husband and wife, Kardama and Devahuti, were advanced in yoga practice. The husband was a Mahayogi, great mystic, and the wife was a Yoga Lakshana, or one advanced in yoga. They united and produced children. Formerly, after making their lives perfect, great sages and saintly persons used to beget children. Otherwise, they strictly observed the rules and regulations of celibacy. Brahmacharya, following the rules and regulations of celibacy, is required for perfection of self-realization and mystic power. There is no recommendation in the Vedic scriptures that one can go on enjoying material sense gratification at one's whims, as one likes, and at the same time become a great meditator by paying a rascal some money. Srila Prabhupada, heavy. Tasyam Sabai Mahayogi Yuktayam Yoga Lakshanai Sasaraja Katita Viryam Tanmeshushrushave Vada. How many offspring did that great yogi beget through the princess who was endowed with eightfold perfection in the yoga principles? O pray tell me this, for I'm eager to hear it. Dama Om Vishnu Vidai Krishna Prista Vidure Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vasityachyade Shatarne. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivas Adi Gauravata Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Grihasthindubhyevacha. Patitam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Hare Krishna.
Hare.
Thank you for coming. At least we have a few devotees here. Oh yes, so this is the conversation. This is Vidura questioning Maitreya. And he's about to introduce the discussion between Manu and Karadama Muni, which leads up to the marriage, Karadama Muni's marriage with Devahuti, which leads up to the appearance of Lord Kapila. So, as you can find, in Srimad Bhagavatam, and actually in other Vedic literatures also, at least some, the Puranas and more historical type literatures, you find a story within a story, and it may even be within another story, but it's all in a very systematically presented to bring out very specific and very valuable and essential points. So here, what has been discussed or introduced, the question is, how many children did Karadama and Devahuti have? Because the answer to the question is one. And then as soon as that one child, Lord Kapila, was born, Karadama Muni left. He left home. And Devahuti brought up Kapila, and then after some time, Kapila instructed her. So, it's, anyway, in the Purport Śrīla Prabhupāda discusses, first of all, about the natures of Karadama and Devahuti, that Devahuti, first of all, Devahuti, was very advanced. Prabhupada says very much advanced. Really means extremely advanced. In the performance of eightfold yoga, this is called Ashtanga. Ashtanga. Ashta meaning eight. And Anga. Anga literally meaning limbs. Limbs, arms and like arms and legs. So it's a type of yoga which has eight very specific divisions. And if it's done properly and successfully, then it brings a great result. So Prabhupada here lists out those ashtangas, the eight divisions. One, first of all, is control of the senses. In terms of the Sanskrit words used, this is called yama. Yama. You must control your senses in the sense of not doing different things. That's yama. What you don't do, make sure you don't do certain things by controlling the senses. Then number two, Prabhupada says, strict following of the rules and regulations. In Sanskrit, this is niyama. Yama, number one. Niyama, number two. Now, niyama, it sounds, because the need is there, it's possible you might think this is about things you can't do. Niyama, you must not do. Whereas yama is things you must do. Interestingly enough, it is around the other way. Yama means don't do certain things. Niyama means you must do certain things. Prabhupada says, strict following of the rules and regulations means rules and regulations in the sense like you must chant 16 rounds. Yeah. You must chant 16 rounds. You must preach Krishna consciousness. You must read the books. That's niyama. Whereas yama means you must not eat meat, fish, eggs, gamble, these things. It's just an interesting little detail. Then number three is practice of the different sitting postures. This is the Sanskrit term is asana. Of course, asana is generally quite well known amongst so many people. Because asana, well, in a very strict sense, it means sitting positions. Even a seat is an asana, actually. You are sitting on an asana, probably doesn't know. So you're sitting on an asana, and you're also sitting on an asana, but it's a difference. And we call it a chair, but it can be called an asana. But this practice of different postures includes all sorts of physical postures. There's a Vedic yogic posture of standing on your head. It's not really got anything much to do with sitting, but it's very sort of authorized and traditional. And so on and so forth. There's all sorts of different postures. We won't go into it, but if you know something about Hatha Yoga, you would know that there's really a lot of all different sides of the body, on the front, on the back, legs up, and this and that, and so on and so forth. This is all asana. And the point is that at a certain point in your practice and trying to move in the direction of perfection through Ashtanga Yoga, then you must do this. You must not do certain things. Yama. You must do certain things. Niyama. But you must also tune the body, you could say. Tune the body so it will become possible or easier to, really the point would be that the contaminations of the body would be reduced, and so therefore the condition of the body would not interfere with further development. Yeah. It's not that the body, through doing different exercises, like you're sitting there, most of you are sitting there, this is an asana. It's not exactly the lotus asana, but it's a relative when you're sitting, just sitting like that, cross-legged on the ground. So it's not exactly that manipulating your body in this way or that is an impetus for spiritual development, or gives potency for spiritual development. But what it really does, at least the main thing, is that it removes contaminations which would otherwise slow down your ability to use your body positively in certain more spiritual activities. Otherwise, Prabhupada didn't take these exercises particularly seriously. Sometimes he talked about the so-called yogis in America or wherever around the world. Yes, you sit down, Prabhupada would say, sit down cross-legged, press your nose, and become God realized, or something like that. It's all a bit of a joke. And even you may have heard, been told the story many times before. One devotee was making the point, trying to make the point to Srila Prabhupada, that our devotees don't get enough exercise. They should do some yoga asanas for the health. And Prabhupada said, yes, like jumping jacks. You know what a jumping jack is? You stand with your hands by your side and you jump vertically. And as you jump, your arms come out straight and your legs go out on an angle. I think that's what you call up or sideways or something, the arms go. And then you jump vertically again and come back to a sort of straight position, something like that. That's a jumping jack. And anyway, the devotee, so Prabhupada said, yes, like jumping jacks. And the devotee, who was more trying to be a bit of a yoga purist, he said, well, actually, Prabhupada, I was meaning more like yoga, hatha yoga, asanas. And Prabhupada said, yes, jumping jacks. And that was the end of the discussion. So that was number three asana. Number four is control of the breath. This is pranayama. Pranayama is also, maybe I don't know really, but might not be as popular as the asanas nowadays. But it's definitely there. They do, certain people do teach like Vedic breathing exercises as part of some regime of yoga. And again, this helps attune the physical system so that it will become easier to avoid the effects of physical contamination in spiritual development. Of course, you have to be careful with breathing exercises. You know, people do these yoga exercises, asanas, in different ways, in different organizations. Oftentimes, or generally perhaps, more just for some physical help. But the breathing exercises, particularly one has to be very careful, because in the Vedic tradition, insanity, mental disease, is considered to be caused by malfunction of the ears within the body. It's not some other sort of, you know, chemical imbalance, really. At least the root cause is imbalance of the ears. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but there's a little more extensive description in Chaitanya Bhagavat, when Lord Chaitanya was beginning to exhibit symptoms of ecstasy, crying, body shaking, collapsing, and various things. Then his mother, he was still at home, and his mother, Sachi, thought that he had some psychological condition. So they called in some doctor. And what did he do? What did he prescribe? Valium. Are you familiar with Valium? Anyway, it's one of these things to calm you down. It may knock you out. But anyway, these sort of psychiatric drugs. No, the doctor came and gave Lord Chaitanya some breathing exercises for rebalancing the life beings. Did it work? No, because the situation was different. It was transcendental ecstasy. It wasn't just a sort of typical psychological problem. But it's an interesting point. It's an interesting point. I just read last night, Srila Prabhupada said, it's in the seventh canto. I'd have to check the verse number. But I just read it last night in the seventh canto. Prabhupada said, psychiatry is humbug. All humbug. Yeah, you can. If you've got Prabhupada's books on your computer, look it up. You'll find it. Psychiatry and humbug. Psychiatry is humbug. All humbug. And Prabhupada just basically goes on to say that if someone has some problem like that, they should just chant. Are you looking it up? Okay, anyway, sometime look it up. Yeah, okay. So, control of the breath. Then number five, withdrawing the senses from sense objects. This is, what's this now? Pratyahara. Pratyahara, if I remember correctly, which I might not. I believe it's Pratyahara. Let's see if I can find it. Right. It's probably Pranayama. Yeah, okay. It's Pratyahara. Number five, withdrawing the senses from sense objects. Doesn't mean just controlling your mind so your mind doesn't contemplate different material sense objects. It means actually withdrawing your senses from this world. Means your senses are to lose contact with the sense objects. Then number six is dharana, dharana. Concentration of the mind, which comes before, means your, I mean, there are explanations here and there of what it involves. But it's the beginning of number seven, meditation, which then leads to, or dhyana, meditation in Sanskrit is dhyana, and then number eight, self-realization or samadhi. This is Ashtanga Yoga, or the different stages. So, Prabhupada's making a point here that Devahuti was very much advanced in these practices. Very much advanced. But Karudama was further advanced, because after Prabhupada says, after samadhi, self-realization, there are 8 further perfectional stages which are called yoga siddhis, yogic mystical perfections. How to make yourself small, how to enter into stone and mystical powers, how to control people's minds. First of all, we've got to control our own. These are different. So there's 8 yogic siddhis. Devamuti was advanced up to the point of samadhi. Yeah. As Prabhupada says, endowed with 8-fold perfection. She had basically completed Ashtanga Yoga. But Karudama, he was further advanced, and he had, he was a Mahayogi, as the verse says, a great mystic. Therefore, as the story develops, it gradually comes to the point, Karudama, Devahuti are married, and they live a very simple, really simple life for some time. And then, at some point, Karudama, by his mystical power, manifests like an aerial city. How's that? It's not a Boeing 747 or even an Airbus 380, but it's an aerial city which can travel interplanetarily, and you don't need fuel because it's also powered by his mystic power. So you see, this is to do with the yogic siddhis, which are extensions above and beyond the basic 8 basic practices of Ashtanga Yoga. So Prabhupada makes an interesting point in the purport, another interesting point, that previously great yogis like Karudama Muni, Devahuti, and in fact it applies to them, but in general, great yogis, mystics, sages, they would go through some very demanding practice, very profound sort of practice. Haribol. Samadhi. This is called samadhi. Or maybe it's dhyana, meditation. I'm sure he's thinking of Krishna. But Prabhupada makes a point. First of all, they come to perfection. And then, formally, after making their lives perfect, great sages and saintly persons used to beget children. Of course, the way we are practicing Krishna consciousness, it's usually around the other way. At least often or usually. Those of you who are householders can inform us, who are not so adept in these matters. But usually, in the early stages, when someone is not advanced and is not really able to control their senses and mind sufficiently, And there will be urges of the body and the mind. Well, they are causing some disruption or something like that. Then a young male devotee, a young female devotee, may become married and produce children. And then later, Panchashorvam Vanam Brajet, when at least the husband reaches 50 years, then Vanam Brajet, he goes to the forest, means takes sannyas, goes on to the next stage of spiritual development, which is living in a renounced position and really cultivating Krishna consciousness in a way which would be more focused generally than when one is living in a household situation and dealing with children and providing necessities of life and so on. So it's interesting that Prabhupada makes this point here. Formerly, after making their lives perfect, great sages and saintly persons used to beget children. But otherwise, if that was not their program, what they were meant to do to produce children, Prabhupada says, otherwise, they strictly observe the rules and regulations of celibacy. Brahmacharya, celibacy, is required for perfection of self-realization and mystical power. Well, we're not so worried about mystical power. You are feeling sleepy. Is it working? Well, maybe it is, but for different reasons. So we're not so worried about mystical power, but self-realization, God-realization, Krishna consciousness, reawakening our forgotten relationship with Krishna, that we're very interested in, we should be very interested in. It should be the focal point of our lives. And in order to do that, at least at some point in one's life, and if possible, throughout, but at least at some point in one's life, one should or must observe celibacy. Therefore, it's expected within ISKCON that devotees, when they reach a certain, as they are coming into old age, 50 to 60, 60 is the specific beginning of old age. 50 is sort of like an overture, an appetizer. Just getting a little view of what may be involved to some degree. But otherwise, old age begins at 60. Then the devotee should live celibate completely. And ideally with very little contact between the senses, other than if there's some, which should be fairly minor, contact in the course of essential devotional service. But at the very least, as Prabhupada says here, as he expresses himself sometimes, there is no recommendation in the Vedic scriptures that one can go on enjoying material sense gratification at one's whims, as one likes, and at the same time become a great meditator by paying a rascal some money. It's not there in the Vedic literatures. You can look if you want and try to find it. 19th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You never know what you can find there. 13th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, all sorts of juicy tidbits, things you hadn't heard of before. But no, no. So it is, the way Prabhupada's putting it is so strong. It's so strong that his point is, it is a farce. It's simply a farce. It's not just, you know, not the best or could be better or, you know, something like that. It's actually farcical. It's just a joke. And there'll be no benefit at all, except from the rascal, for the rascal who's so-called teaching you, he will become enriched by your paying him for the basically meaningless and ineffective instruction that he's giving. Yes, so the subject then is interesting. What did Karadamba and Deva Muti do? Here they are. They're great personalities. Deva Muti at least has reached the perfection of the initial eight stages of Ashtanga Yoga up to the point of Samadhi. And Karadamba Muni has gone further and developed all the mystical powers. But now there's this idea of them having a child or children. So what did they do? What happened? And how did it happen? This is very interesting for someone like Vidura, who's already a saintly person. We read some days ago, as I recall, never was here, but somewhere I did. How the devotees, it was verse 1. I read it here. Regulated sex life to generate good population is worth accepting. Actually, Vidura was not interested in hearing the history of persons who really engaged in sex life, just your typical person. But he was interested in the progeny of Swayambhuva Manu. Because in that dynasty, good devotee kings were born who empowered their subjects spiritually. So Vidura is a saintly person. He is beyond being attracted by some flickering attractions of this material world. So he's not interested in some publication or just some anything to do with people and their material sex life. He's not interested. But he is interested in the relationship between Karadama and Devamuti because they're great spiritual persons. And now here's this idea of them having children. So what happened? How did it all go on? What happened? What was the result? He says, "Oh, pray tell me this, for I am eager to hear it." Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Any point from anyone?
Hare Krishna. I just walked in and I went away, but I said, that kid can't go to him about it.
Oh, yes, it's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I was asking you, did you like it, right?
Maybe you didn't understand. It was just a joke.
Other way, I mean, many years ago, the Hayat Times is after 24 candles power.
The what?
In the Hayat Times,
Oh,
after candles after 24 candles.
Well, I don't know about that specifically, but I definitely, in Brahma Loka, the Purana, which includes Srimad Bhagavatam, is 1 billion verses. Our Purana, meaning the 18 Puranas, they're separated, but actually it's sort of one body called the Purana. It's a lot less. You know, like Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the 18 is 15,000. Some have more verses, some have less. If we were to say 15,000 as an average, just for the sake of interest, 18 times 15,000 is?
1.2 million.
Is it? Okay, let's say 1.2 million. That's the Purana on this planet. But in Brahma Loka, the top planet in the universe, the Purana is 1 billion verses. But it's just an interesting little point in that regard. In Tattvasandarbha, Jiva Goswami is discussing this point, how different Vedic literatures manifest differently in different places at different times. And he says, in regard to Srimad Bhagavatam, that we should not think, we don't need to worry, that because Srimad Bhagavatam here is smaller, less verses than it may be in Brahma Loka or wherever, some other places, that something is missing, and therefore we're going to miss out. You know, particularly miss out on something we really need. He says, don't worry about that. It is complete as it is. But anyway, here, 13th canto, it's just our little humorous device to draw devotees' attention to the fact that some people, and maybe sometimes even some devotees, speculate on, you know, different things to do with Krishna consciousness, and may even present such speculations to others, and we shouldn't do that because it's misleading. And as I've many times said, in the very early days in London, I was walking through the Prasadam Room, and I heard one of our brahmacharis preaching to someone about the four modes of material nature. Really? And then I thought, right, 13th canto, or 19th chapter, something like that. Anyway, thank you.
I see that the eighth level of the Hatha Yoga deals with self-realization.
Samadhi, yeah.
And then but we see thereafter we have Bhakti Yoga, and that goes into God realization.
Yes, well, you know, generally through Ashtanga Yoga, the most they can realize is the super soul. Parama, Ashtanga Yogis may realize Paramatma. We read like that here and there. Prabhupada talks about that. But then they may think, if they don't know there's further opportunity for further progress, they may think, that's it. Perfection. It's pretty good compared to just being in bodily consciousness. But the problem, a possible problem is, they, when they see Paramatma, super soul pour out, they may think, and they do think sometimes, some of them, this is me. I've realized me. And therefore it's said to be something like the last snare, the last trap of Maya. You may realize some aspect of the Lord, but you think it's you. They're related, yeah. Liberation in the impersonal sense is self, a type of self-realization. Just realizing how brahmasmi, I'm eternal spirit soul. It's self-realization. But it's not a detailed form. It's just like a very simple introductory level of realization of yourself. Just like for us to understand that you are a human being. It's a type of realization. It's true. You can't say it's not true. At least in material terms. But it's just a very basic level of realization of what you are in material terms. Next step would be you are male, or you have a male body. That defines self in material terms more clearly. But then if you want to get into it, you know, on that level, then you have to realize the person's character, personality, all these different details of who is this person. But still to say, you're a human, in that sense, it's true. So, Brahman realization, to realize that I am an eternal spirit soul, and that's all, that's a type of self-realization. But we haven't realized what sort of spirit soul you are. What sort of devotee, what relationship you have with the Lord. Just the beginning. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.